This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast. Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join the Discord server for Sophomere Studios.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/sophiamarestudios, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we are covering Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, chapters 21 and 22, the House Elf Liberation Front and the Unexpected Task. In these chapters, Dobby is back.
Dobby is back. In, yeah.
And girl problems.
Oh my god. I have so many thoughts on chapter 22, so.
Yes, indeed. And joining us again, we haven't seen her or heard from her since Chamber of Secrets, but my sister, Holly. Hi, Holly.
Hello. Hi, everyone.
So, specifically, Holly, why did you want to go over these chapters of when I said pick something from Goblet of Fire?
Yeah, good question. So I picked these a while ago at this point. I had to go back and reread them, like, again, just to remember what I picked. But, yeah, I don't know. I guess I just feel like there's a lot of, important plot stuff in other chapters. Not that these chapters aren't important, but I don't know. I just kind of liked it was more sort of geared towards kind of day to day or sort of the more like relatable like angst or things that be, well, not the Dobby chapter, but like the chapter with chapter 22 with trying to find a date. I don't know, just kind of things that are maybe a little more realistic to life, you know, other than just all the, you know, fantastical wizard stuff. Yeah, I thought that would be kind of fun to cover. And then, yeah, I think you pointed out that the last time I was here, it was also a Dobby chapter, which
you really like Dobby.
Yeah, and you that's a you secret. Had you said that you were like, you must really like Dobby, which is weird because I don't dislike Dobby. I really like Dobby, but he wasn't like, I wouldn't say he's one of my like top favorite characters, but yeah, I guess I did pick another Dobby chapter, so maybe subconsciously. Yeah, I don't know.
For the Dobby. Alrighty then. So, again, chapter 21, the House Elf Liberation Front, where we're immediately picking up, like, maybe just a few hours after the previous chapter, where Harry is sending off his letter to Sirius, his letter detailing play-by-play exactly how he evaded the Hungarian horntail.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, I guess as like a parental figure, I would be kind of terrified to get this letter, but also like relieved because Sirius knows what's going on. Like he knows the Triwizard Tournament's happening. He knows Harry's participating in it. But I was a little, the treatment of Pigwidgeon, it just frustrates me because it's just a sweet little owl that's trying its best. And they're like, oh, you piece of trash. You know, like Ron is so dismissive of poor Pigwidgeon and he's just trying his best. I don't know.
Yeah. Poor Pigwidgeon.
But Ron's being extra nice to Harry, I think, you know, after being a kind of a jerk to him earlier. I think there's a lot of things to say about Ron's behavior at this point. You know,
oh, yeah.
It's getting kind of a. But yeah, we could talk about that more later.
Yeah, because even if all the stuff in Prisoner of Azkaban with Ron was, you know, I tend to be more Team Ron in terms of the specific issue with Scabbers as a pet not being respected. So, like, I feel like Ron had a more of a foundation for his frustrations, but here it's just no.
Yeah, he has probably my level of emotional maturity for some time, I'm not gonna lie. But I call like what Ron's doing right now the non-apology apology, you know, like where you're just kind of, you're not saying like, gosh, I was such a jerk for so long. He's just saying like, he's just being extra nice. I don't know. I think that it is a very relatable human behavior for some of us out there who have, you know, pre-therapy behavior, I would say.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I love how, you know, now that the Golden Trio is reunified, you know, Harry is in the middle, and then we've got Ron being the total optimist and Hermione being the total pessimist. And he's like, nothing can be worse than a dragon. And Hermione's like, I'm not so sure. And Ron's like, right, little ray of sunshine, aren't you?
What a silly thing to say, because I feel like they have only witnessed things that are dragon level bad and, you know, beyond. Like, what about, did he forget about Aragog? Like, he has the fear of spiders that I do. So, like, to me, that would be burned in my brain. But that's just me, Ron. I don't know.
Yeah. So, they go down because Fred and George are throwing a party for Harry in honor of his triumph. And lots of cakes, butterbeers, pumpkin juices, all sorts of good things. And Harry tries opening his egg. What did you think of this, Jess?
Yeah, you know what? This is probably where I was getting a little confused about this, because they tried to get it open, but they couldn't open it. Is that right? Or they didn't pay attention to it? I was a little, I don't know, foggy brained when I was reading that part.
Yeah, so he could open it, but it gave out this really like terrible noise.
The screeching that they said it was like, it sounded like a banshee, but yeah. So they don't quite know what they're facing yet. And Harry kind of does a classic procrastinator trick. He's like, oh, I'll worry about that later. So I know they kind of discussed that in a while, but then they're speculating about what would be what task two is, because Neville says it kind of sounds like somebody's being tortured or something. That's the kind of noise that's coming out of this.
I like how Fred is like, it sounds like Percy in the shower. Another enjoyable quip from Fred and George. Actually, I think George says it, but
yeah. And that's then you know, Neville ends up ingesting one of, what is it, their canary creams, and turns into a canary and back again. And I'm just, for Neville being picked on a lot, you know, in the last few years, it was heartwarming to know that at least Neville can laugh at himself.
Yeah, that's, say if you can't beat him, join him, I guess, a little bit. Neville's catching on. The thing that I remember when reading this, because it was so long ago last night, you know, I kind of knew when they were getting into the kitchen that something was going to start happening with the house elves, because Hermione, this was kind of her, she was like, let me figure something out here. So this is also kind of in this kind of scene, the house elves are, I feel like that's what I was really kind of looking for, is to see how they kind of dote on people and how the people are taking advantage of that, but they don't perceive that as taking advantage. It's just like they live to serve. That's kind of like what they're psyched to do.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, but Hermione's able to get the dirt from Fred and George of how to get into the kitchens, and like they're just, oh, blah, blah, blah. And it takes them a moment to realize, wait.
Yeah, wait, she's like, so how do you get into the kitchens there, Fred?
And it takes him a while to realize Hermione is not the type that would want to know how to break into the kitchens.
Yeah.
I was also kind of, well, I mean, again, I came back to this cold just to read the couple chapters again, but I guess, I know I'm probably out of the loop from your previous podcast, but like, I didn't realize Fred and George are like, you know, they're making all these experimental, you know, foods and candies and things, like joke candies and stuff, at this stage, right? So this is book four. So they're already kind of starting to do that sort of thing.
Yeah, because there's even the previous one of the chapters that's called Weasley's Wizard Wheezes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it is? Oh, okay. I couldn't remember, so I didn't want to give anything away.
Yes, and so yeah, just happy jollivanting. Finally, Harry goes up, and I just thought it was funny. Harry set his tiny model of the Hungarian horntail on the table next to his bed, where it yawned, curled up, and closed its eyes. Really, Harry thought as he pulled the hangings on his four-poster bed closed, Hagrid had a point. They were all right, really. Dragons.
The relationship with dragons in these books, I am just have so constant questions. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. I think they were like eating, there's some like a dragon liver that shows up here. And I was like, what? I don't know. I haven't quite figured out the relationship human to dragon mm-hmm. quite yet, or wizard to dragon.
Yeah, I remember when I read these for the first time, I think I was kind of surprised that they like introduced dragons. I don't know, just because I feel like dragons are such a cliche fantasy thing. So yeah, I just remember the first time reading these that I thought, well, I guess in the first book there was like the egg that Hagrid had and all that stuff. So I guess they've introduced dragons before. But yeah, I remember actually being a little surprised because I didn't think this was the kind of story where they were going to bring dragons into the plot somehow. But they managed to get them in there. Yeah, kind of a weird, I don't want to go off on a tangent, but like just the dragons and how they're being used for like games. Like if you think of the game that of the trial that Harry just did, I know this isn't about that chapter, but you know, like it's pretending or it thinks it's protecting its egg, right? And Harry, you know, the task is to like get the egg, and like this is kind of like, I don't know, traumatizing for the animal probably. I mean, I know they're dangerous animals, but I don't know. I don't know how I feel about the whole treatment of dragons.
Yes.
That's a good point.
Yeah, because there is this whole very much so that treating dragons as sort of endangered species and stuff, but at the same time, the Ministry of Magic has no qualms in using dragons for this like type of spectacle.
And then like the boots, weren't there like dragon skin boots? They kind of show up in, I was trying to think of the equivalent, like the My World equivalent. And I was thinking sometimes they treat them like cattle a little bit, which is I don't know, maybe the fighting the bulls or something that could be equivalent to the dragon fighting. I don't know. I just have a lot of questions about the dragon treatment.
Yeah, because if they're, are they supposed to be endangered in this series? Because that is weird that if they're endangered and also like being used for like sport and stuff.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly. Are they totally endangered? Well, care about their well-being enough because they are one of the largest creatures than one of the most, you know, most hazardous creatures that could expose their world. And so I assume the investment in them is just as much so as if they were endangered because they constantly have to be on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, yeah, dragons. And then we move on to December. Harry was glad of the fires and thick walls every time he passed Durmstrang's ship on the lake, which was pitching in the high winds, its black sails billowing against the dark skies. And we get dropped into care of magical creatures, and Hagrid has no idea if the blast-ended Scroots hibernate or not.
I thought that was so surprising, because he seems so well... Hagrid, confusing character, because he seems very caring about these magical creatures, but then he's like, yeah, I'm not sure if they hibernate or not. I'm like, maybe something you should know before you're like, here, children, care for these blast-ended Scroots. I don't know.
Yeah, it does seem, I mean, Hagrid, I mean, if anything, he's usually pretty knowledgeable about animals, like, because he's fascinated by them. But I don't know if it's in this chapter or somewhere else, but it's somewhere suggested that maybe these are, like, half-breeds or some kind of illegal breed of some kind. So maybe, like, that's why he doesn't know. But even then, is he literally learning about these creatures like along with the kids for the very first time? I don't know.
Which doesn't seem like the best strategy in the context of his experience with little Draco Malfoy and Buckbeak.
Right. It's like, know your critter before you, like, introduce them, because the consequences could be dire. I don't know. Sometimes I think these characters just have amnesia, and then they're like, oh, new school year. Let's see what happens. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, well, these creatures maybe aren't as endearing as Buckbeak, so I guess we don't care if they, we should care if they attack someone, but,
if it's Draco, I don't care.
Yeah, who cares? But yeah, that's a good point. Hagrid's, last year, like one scratch from Buckbeak, it was a very serious situation. And now they're like chasing these things with stingers, like all around. And because Rita Skeeter shows up, right? And she's like looking at all the kids briefly. And like, I think there's a couple of descriptions, like so and so has a scratch on their arms, so and so has singed robes, etc. Right. So they're not doing too great at like staying safe around these things. So yeah, right. that is weird.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And yeah, Rita Skeeter comes along, and typical, you know, Harry can recognize immediately that Rita Skeeter is trying to butter up Hagrid, and by pretending to give a crap about the blast-ended Scroots. And then, you know, when she starts probing, like, Harry and Hermione are just like, please, Hagrid didn't get these illegally, did he?
Right, that's their first thought, is like, oh god, here we go. Because they know Hagrid is kind of a little... He's probably just honest. But when Rita Skeeter's coming around asking about magical creatures, I knew something was going on. I mean, I kind of thought, this is not a person. It would be like a gossip columnist coming to, like, I don't know, a place where they're studying animals being like, I really want to do my next column about animals. Like, no, you don't. You're up to no good. And mm-hmm. Unfortunately, Hagrid did not catch on to that. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, not to pick on Hagrid, because I mean, we all hate Rita Skeeter, or at least we're meant to not, you know, dislike her very strongly. But, you know, also like Dumbledore, like, is he keeping an eye on what Hagrid is doing? I mean, we love Hagrid, but honestly, like, is he making the best choices for the students? And you think even if Hagrid maybe didn't realize, although he should because he's an adult. Like what Dumbledore maybe thinks, or I mean, forget Dumbledore, McGonagall, who's like deputy headmistress or whatever. Like,
honestly, I think Dumbledore's just sitting from his tower eating popcorn, watching them chase the Scroots,
watching the show.
He's just like, I'm so old, like let's enjoy the ride, everything's gonna be fine, I guess. I don't know, I wondered that as well, so that's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. Because I feel like if McGonagall were aware, she wouldn't maybe be on board with students getting scratched and singed and all this stuff. But again, they're wizards. So maybe it's like, again, viewed as less serious because you can just patch up minor things. But again, like Draco's injury was treated as very, very serious last book. Right. So like it does kind of go a little all over the place in terms of what's acceptable and what's not sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. And Harry's like, she'll twist everything he says. Just as long as he didn't import those Scroots illegally or anything. Hagrid's been in loads of trouble before and Dumbledore's never sacked him. Worst thing that could happen is Hagrid will have to get rid of the Scroots. Sorry, did I say worst? I meant best.
Yeah.
Good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Harry and Ron are back being buddies, and so they can thoroughly enjoy, you know, mocking divination and Professor Trelawney and all of those things.
Something I want to point out again here, like just Trelawney, I don't know if we've talked about this before, if you guys talked about it. So in the last book, right, I didn't do any things with you guys, but you know, Trelawney goes into her trance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like the servant will return tonight, et cetera, et cetera. And it turns out to have been maybe a real prediction, right, about everything that happened. But I don't know, there are things she says, maybe I shouldn't say this because I don't want to give other stuff away, but there's been a lot of dissecting by the community, I think, of just the other things she has said, like not in a trance-like state, but just like the random things. Like here, I think she says she sees death like coming over the school or something like that. Or I don't know if they're looking at crystal balls and she sees death. And, you know, people have really like scrutinized some of the things she said and like found ways in which they might actually be true. So she's maybe not even as fraudulent as, you know, as she seems, or, you know, she maybe even has more truth in what she's saying than she even realizes, you know. So I don't know. This isn't a big scene for divination class. So, you know, just wanted to point that out briefly before moving on. But yeah, I don't know what you guys think of Trelawney.
I think it would be interesting to look at it. And, you know, Amy has started pulling like the astrology cards because like it's such a prominent theme. The Dark Moon Oracle, is that right? Or the Black Moon Oracle? I forget what it's called.
Black Moon Astrology Cards.
Black Moon Astrology Cards. Yeah, to kind of help like us kind of understand some of these predictions, because she talks about like Pluto disrupting everyday life. And I just kind of wonder how much, you know, truth to some of these things there are, because I know, you know, in astrology, the alignment of Pluto is related to, I don't know what, and I don't know what house, but there is, I think it's, I think the astrological sign is Scorpio, but I could be wrong. Mm-hmm. So I'm just always interested to see like how close to astrology is she, her predictions, or are they really just like totally out there? Like when Ron and Harry made their charts and they were just writing all kinds of random stuff. And I was like, you guys, they can look at this in a certain way. So interesting.
Yep. And Harry's like, it'd be more impressive if she hadn't done it about 80 times before. But if I drop dead every time she told me I'm going to, I'd be a medical miracle.
Yeah, that is true. I guess she does predict his death, specifically his death, a lot, I think, is what we're supposed to take away from that. I mean, before it was like the Grimm, like she saw the Grimm. I don't know if that specifically means, I mean, I know the omen is like a death omen, but I don't know if she was specifically predicting his death, but I guess she was in a way. So yeah, maybe she's not as legit if you pick apart certain things. But it kind of reminds me of I was watching an episode of Leverage, like, with my parents the other day, and there's one episode where they kind of go after this. I don't know if you guys have seen that show, Mm-mm. but they like go after, they're like a modern day Robin Hood team, and they go after powerful corrupt individuals. And they go after this one guy who's like a psychic, right? He has like a TV show and he can like tell people like, But he's not really psychic. He's just really good at cold reading people, where he'll just kind of like throw out some things randomly, and like whichever one you have a reaction to, even if it's minor, he can see it. And then he'll like actually say things that are pretty accurate, because he keeps kind of guessing. It's like the person actually leads him without knowing it to the right answer. And not to say that Trelawney is cold reading, but I think a lot of things can just be interpreted, you know, as correct, you know, right, in some way, shape, or form, no matter what they are. So I think that's also something to be said about that.
Yeah, like Rasputin.
Yeah, or was the Sylvia Brown was somebody that they say that she predicted COVID. I don't know. Yeah.
But so they get back from divination, and Hermione comes sprinting up and she's like, you gotta see, come.
Okay, I'll tell you, you always ask me like what my reaction to some of these scenes were. And I thought all the house elves were like all of a sudden decided to protest. I was like, whoa, that really went, that was quick. But that wasn't like, close-ish.
No, but you knew it was coming, I assume, when you realized it was the pear portrait.
The pear portrait, is that what you said?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. It's good to see an old friend, I guess, is what I'll say.
Yep.
See Dobby back.
Yep. So, yep, they go into the kitchens and Dobby is there. And Dobby basically was wandering around for like probably a year, like probably during Prisoner of Azkaban, trying to find work, but no one will take him because he wants to be paid.
I I'm sure there's a connection we could make to the Great Resignation and things like that right now with this in particular. I just want to take one note before we get too far into that and say, like, Ron came up with a much better name for SPEW, the House Elf Liberation Front. I'm like, why didn't Hermione go, huh, good idea? Instead, it's just kind of I know it is the title of the chapter, but I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, he's excited to see them. When he starts telling them about, you know, how he's looking for work and wanting to get paid and all that, like, the other elves, like, slink away because they're kind of embarrassed by everything he's saying. Like, it's not appropriate for an elf to be saying these kinds of things. I mean, you know, I feel like this could turn into a very, very lengthy, lengthy topic. But, like, there's so much discussion out there about, like, you know, obviously Hermione's kind of, like, you know, wanting to speak for them and help them, like, has its own issues because it's kind of like, you know, the sort of savior hero complex thing. And is it even appropriate that she's like she's hiding, isn't she, like, hiding hats and things in the dormitory, we find out, or something?
That's book 5, Holly.
Oh, that's okay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to spoil anything.
I know she leads the front, so no, that's not it.
Okay, well, I it's not a super major plot point, so hopefully I haven't spoiled anything. But you know, so maybe that's something to talk about later, like Hermione's behavior specifically, like towards the elves and how she's dealing with it. But just for the elves themselves, you know, like, they say they want to help and, like, it's their mission to help. And I see a lot of, I don't know, again, the community out there being like, well, you know, they choose to do it, so it's okay. And, you know, the closer you look at it, you know, they also do the thing where, you know, if they say something bad, or, you know, they will bang their heads or, like, hit themselves if they're, like, feel they need to be punished. That is 100%, like, conditioning / call it brainwashing behavior, essentially. I think people don't like thinking of the elves as conditioned or brainwashed because it's like, yeah, but they're so nice and cute. And it's like, just because maybe these creatures would be nice and helpful to you, like, just naturally because it's maybe their nature, doesn't mean that their acceptance of their situation now is necessarily okay. Like, I was watching a lot of stuff recently about, like, cults and, like, how people get pulled into cults. Like, no one wakes up and says, right, I'm gonna join a cult today, you know. Like, just through different peer pressures and suggestion and then reinforcement, like, if everyone around you knows it's just the way it is, then you accept it. And I feel like that's how the elves have been living. Like, this is what we do, and this is who we are, and we don't want to be different. There's people who don't want to leave cults or get pulled out of, like, very oppressive kind of, like, isolated societies because it's the only life they've known, and it's their family, you know, and right, they have a real resistance to it. You know, which is why the elves are ashamed. But I mean, it's really something that I think should be addressed by the wizarding community. It's not okay for these animals to be, sorry, not animals, oh my gosh, for these creatures to be, like, living this way. So that's what I think. I think they're conditioned. That's my stance on the whole elf situation.
Yep. And it's not just a reunion with Dobby, but Winky is also there.
Yeah. Winky, who is also freed, kind of, right, kind of in a humiliating way for her.
Basically was fired.
Basically was fired. Freed in a different sort of, yeah. So she's kind of found Dobby and they've kind of teamed up a little bit. But Winky is still very emotional about this, which I was like, maybe we're being a little sexist, but that's okay.
Yeah, so. Well,
and again, conditioning, she's like beating her fists and all this stuff, like, it's quite a sight.
Yeah, it's
for them to see.
Yeah, and it's just interesting again that, you know, why is Dobby so different compared to, again, what we're seeing from the majority of the house elves? And, you know, you know, there is a lot of conditioning, but also how much of it is dictated by how really, really crappy your master is. Because,
right.
you know, beyond the typical, you know, accepting this very problematic system, we don't have anything to suggest that Mr. Crouch was really, really mean to Winky in his capacity as her master in the way that Lucius Malfoy was with Dobby.
I definitely
don't think Crouch, like, would beat her, kick her, do other things. Like, Malfoy, I think, kicks Dobby at one point. Like, Crouch is, like, such a actually, like, prim and proper kind of guy that I don't think he would behave that way. But I mean, again, like, it's unpaid, you know, like, you're just a servant. And
yeah,
I mean, he's definitely not a kind guy. He's kind of a grouch. Crouch. He's a grouch. Yeah.
Crouch the grouch. I didn't put that together. So that's fun.
Yeah. So, you know, they try to comfort Winky, and Winky is just like, you know, Master can't handle everything on his own. And Hermione's like, he's doing perfectly fine. We've seen him because he's a judge in the Triwizard Tournament. And somehow they get on to Bagman. And Winky's got things to say about Bagman.
Yeah, but she won't come out and say it. She's kind of like hinting it.
Yeah, I was going to say, she's got things to say, but she won't say it.
Yeah. She's like
a bad wizard.
I feel like I do that at work sometimes. I'm like, I have some thoughts. I'm not going to say anything, but I have some thoughts. So it's just like, obviously she's concerned enough about that connection to really let it out right now. I have a feeling she'll change her story.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We'll see.
Yeah, and, you know, Dobby is just, you know, going through his whole how he was negotiating with Dumbledore about his pay and...
I love this part.
Yeah, Dumbledore saying, like, you know, I don't have, you know, I can call Dumbledore a Barmy or Codger if I like.
Damn.
Yeah, this is a moment. See, we get moments like... You know, you've got Hagrid, who maybe should be supervised a little bit by Dumbledore. So it's like, Dumbledore, what are you doing? Like, what kind of school are you running? And then you'll get these other moments where it's like, wow, like, Dumbledore wanted to pay Dobby more. And Dobby just felt like, oh, no, that's too much. And, you know, is actually, like, all for paying and, you know, all for doing whatever these, you know, creatures feel is just, and, you know, is actually like a pretty moral guy, I would say. So I don't know. Yeah. It's so funny, like, how I feel about Dumbledore going back and forth. Like, I think he's moral and has good ethics. I think sometimes he's a little irresponsible. Yeah,
he's not a good manager. Sometimes.
Not a good manager. Good teacher. Not a good manager.
Yeah. He'd be one of those people, I don't micromanage, which means I don't pay attention. Like, sometimes that's what that means. I have learned.
Yeah. And Hermione asked, how much are you getting paid, Winky? Winky is a disgraced elf, but Winky is not yet getting paid. Winky is not sunk so low as that.
This is so confusing to me. Like, all these, I mean... Here's the thing. That's like my favorite phrase to say at home. So sorry. Winky's like the not paying people. Cause I kind of assumed that, okay, if Dobby's getting paid, then why isn't everybody getting paid? You know, maybe did they all refuse pay, or was it just one of them? And I know how house elves are, you know, perceived. The other thing that I feel like is, I continue to understand better is just how foreign a concept to the house elves their like freedom is, and how Hermione comes in as an outsider and is like, well, I mean, you're working, you should get paid for it. And how everybody else, you know, and Harry, I think, is kind of not committed either way. He's not on the spew level quite yet. But, you know, his perspective is interesting, whereas the Weasleys are kind of like, yeah, it's just kind of their thing. So continues to be interesting how everybody perceives this one creature in this world.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then, so much we could talk about in terms of, you know, the house elf situation. Jess and I in previous chapters have kind of hammered, I think enough for now, the notion of...
Hammered on that. It reminds me...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, just specifically hammering on Hermione's white savior complex.
Yeah. I think that's something to think about. What I'm also kind of thinking about now that sort of relates to this as a concept is I was watching this weird show, and I don't even know what it was called, but it's like this team of people, and it's like in Utah somewhere, and they actually will go in and they will rescue women from like these, you know, very isolated, I'm not trying to offend anyone when I say Mormon communities, because there's normal Mormons, but like, you know, they're like Mormon, but they're like very, very, you know, like the multiple wives, and they don't have internet, and, you know, they're just isolated, and they live like, you know, like pioneers almost, right? And, you know, the women have no like power or rights or anything like that, and the men run everything. And this particular group they went into, like, there were all kinds of scandals related to, like, the head of the group. Like, he was a pedophile and all this stuff. But anyway, there's this help group that goes in and tries to rescue women. And it's, like, because these people even have their own, like, not legitimate, but sort of, you know, some kind of law enforcement, you know, they have to do it kind of, like, undercover because they don't want to get caught. And they don't take women who don't want to be taken away. Like, they don't force, you know, even though what they would love to do is go in and like rescue like the children and all the women like from this situation, they don't, because a lot of the people choose to stay and be there, and they think the rest of the world is evil, and they think they're protected there and all this stuff, right? So yeah, I saw this one episode where they go in, you know, they kind of sneak at a time that's safe. They take two women away, and one of the women was really, really, eager to leave. Like, she wanted to get out of the situation. And she brings a friend who is, like, on the fence. Like, they, you know, she's, like, coming along because it's her friend, but she's not entirely convinced that their lifestyle isn't, like, a good situation. You know, so it's, like, are they kidnapping her if they take her away? You know, what is that, kidnapping, or is it not? You know, is it rescuing? It's just a very weird thing when you've got people who say they're happy with how they're living, and yet they're either in denial or they've been convinced based on misinformation that this is the best way. And it's just, like, how do you deal with that? It's very bizarre. It's very bizarre.
Yeah, I think I've seen that show, or at least a variant of it, and they were having to, like, specifically, like, work around in some capacities, because in some states, it's illegal to aid a minor in running away, so they couldn't even technically drive her anywhere. They couldn't technically do anything, but they were just monitoring the situation to make sure a taxi was waiting for her so she could do everything by herself to escape, because technically they would have been culpable.
Oh, wow.
Oh, I didn't even think about that aspect of it. Yeah, that, I mean, it's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, house elf slavery will be coming up in be a point of reference until book 7.
Okay.
Yeah, this is not the last we will hear of house elves by a long time.
I figure it's just beginning. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, they mosey on out of the kitchen. And let's hope they don't look too closely at Winky, said Harry. Oh, she'll cheer up, said Hermione, though she sounded a bit doubtful. Once the shock's worn off, and she'll get used to Hogwarts. She'll see how much better off she is without that Crouch man. She seems to love him, said Ron thickly. Doesn't think much of Bagman, though, does he? Probably says he's not a very good head of department, said Hermione, and let's face it, he's got a point, hasn't he? Yep, and thus concludes chapter 21.
Yes.
Yep. And now it's chapter 22, The Unexpected Task, Slavery to Teenage Drama.
I was gonna say this is called the like let's step out of Hogwarts and go into like a teen drama chapter. Also, let's just re-traumatize everybody thinking about these things in high school and middle school. Or maybe that's just me. I don't know.
Yeah. So Pandora's box is opened by Professor McGonagall because she calls Harry after Transfiguration class and tells him, you know, the champions are supposed to open the Yule Ball, which means you have to have a partner. It's not even I'll go stag and it'll be okay. He, as a champion, cannot do that.
That's kind of interesting to me. Like, I mean, it makes sense. It's kind of like their thing, so they should. I kind of equated it to like a wedding, and you kind of expect the bride and groom to dance. Maybe I didn't at my wedding, but you know, I understand that that they're kind of the guests of honor in a way. But also, I was thinking like this is kind of a weird, like forced, like you must bring a partner. It's like, well, okay, like let's back off a little bit. Also, I was just thinking of some heteronormativity. That's probably not how I say that here, but in this, because none of the. I was like, why don't they all dance together? Oh, that's too far, you know, because there's three guys and one girl. So anyway.
I mean, McGonagall said, bring your partners. She didn't technically specify, but I think it is implied that that's what's expected, you know, is, you know, male and female couples.
Yeah. And it's just, yeah, it's just interesting to thrust this on them because, like, it's not like, Hogwarts has a like tradition of like balls or specific parties, and this is just one of them, and they have to make sure they're doing really, really well. They just like throw this on Harry and the students, like, yes, we're having a dance.
No pressure. You know, let's fan the flames of teen awkwardness all of a sudden.
Before now, the only way you could ask someone on a date outside Hogwarts was to go to Hogsmeade.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
That is an interesting thing because, I mean, you'd think that at a school they would maybe have dances or something, functions from time to time. Because, I mean, I did in middle school, and I was just thinking about this, like, do they never have these kinds of events? You know, this is only because of the Triwizard Tournament. So I actually found that a little bit sad. Like, oh, they wouldn't usually be doing this at all. It's just for the tournament, I guess. So, yeah, I mean, maybe these kids aren't used to, like, having to find dates for anything at all.
Yeah, it's in my fantasy headcanon, I like to think that there are masquerade balls on Halloween at Hogwarts.
That's so funny you say that, because that's kind of my assumption. Like Christmas and Halloween, I was like, there's some sort of like ball going on, but I guess it's never been explicitly mentioned. And then I'm kind of, I guess, again, lack of exposure. I knew the Yule Ball was something, and I just kind of thought maybe that would show up for the students as they got older, like maybe when they hit the 14-15 mark, that's when the dancing starts. And then I was just applying like American Midwest dancing, I think, rules or school rules to this book, which don't apply, so I don't know.
Yep. And I love Harry's like, I'm not dancing, I don't dance. Oh yes you do, that's what I'm telling you.
Yeah, she's like,
will dance or else.
Right. You better start learning now, buddy, because it's happening. So
this is a part where in the movie they actually added a funny bit that I liked. I'm not as big a fan of the movies as I am of the books, just because the books are like so much more, there's like so much more detail and like the original stuff. But in the movies they put in a scene where they actually have to go to dancing class, I think. And McGonagall is like with, I think she's with Rupert Grint. She's with Ron, I think. And she's like, okay, Mr. Weasley, put your like hand around my waist. And he's like, around where?
Yes. Yeah. And then, so, yeah, Harry's like, why do they have to move in packs?
Oh, God. Let's Harry and the sexism all of a sudden. Come on,
and
man.
And just the typical, like, you know, adolescent boys, puberty always involves a certain level of sexism and chauvinism.
Yeah.
I feel like I heard this complaint in real life by guys like women going to the bathroom together or that sort of thing, which is weird because I don't recall ever. I mean, maybe some, like sometimes, but other times, like I just go to the bathroom like on my own. I don't know. It's not like guys don't move in packs. Like,
right.
I think sometimes people are with their friends and sometimes people aren't with their friends. And it's just as simple as that.
But I think, I guess, talking about that specifically, and maybe I'm thinking into it too deeply, but it's like an opportunity for women to exit the like social arena for being observed, you know, observed by other women, sure. But if you're going in there with your friends to just talk and get out of the way, otherwise, it's kind of like women are constantly sent the message they're on display. So especially in these situations, at least from when I was a kid at like a, or at school or whatever, it was like you're always, you can never hide from the male gaze sometimes. So.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Harry, I feel bad for the first one they mentioned, the curly-haired third-year Hufflepuff girl who asked Harry, and Harry just said no. And I felt so bad for her.
Dude. Yeah, because he didn't, I mean, it was like a knee-jerk reaction. He wasn't trying to be mean. It says he was just so taken aback. He was just like, what? No, no. Mm-hmm. I feel bad for her too.
Yeah, and so I think, you know, again, Harry the writer in telling us, writing down these memories, is trying to convey that maybe his inexperience in the sense of, I was busy, like, you know, saving the world from, you know, basilisks and, you know, trolls and stuff. Like, I've been so busy doing that stuff that I don't know how to handle girls the way I should at this age.
Yeah, his only kind of relationship with another woman that isn't family, and of his age, so let me break that down, is Hermione. And they kind of treat Hermione as kind of, quote, asexual.
Unquote, one of the guys.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, to the point, you know, they definitely, she calls it out here at the end of this chapter. Like, remember, you know, I am a girl, but which I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, but I think you're exactly right. Nobody is sitting around like thinking about, you know, we're not reading Twilight, you know, Bella's not sitting pining for Edward and vice versa. It's they're like fighting things and saving the world, as you said.
Yeah. I think also he says here, which, I mean, is probably also partially true. It's probably a bit of an astute observation on Harry's part. But, you know, he's wondering, like, if these people would be coming up, if these girls would be asking him to go if he weren't one of the champions. And he thinks that has something to do with it. You know, would they be asking me if I wasn't one of the champions? So, you know, I mean, that doesn't mean he needs to be abrupt with anybody. But, yeah, I mean, that actually is something to think about, because that might be true as well. So,
yes, yeah, that can also be true. But I feel like Harry would have been dealing with that anyway, even if he wasn't a champion, because he's Harry Potter.
Yeah, it's like always the question, right? Would they be coming up to me if I weren't, you know, famous Harry Potter, if I was just like some regular guy?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But
yep. And we get a little reprieve by they finally have a little chat with Hagrid, and he's like, she didn't seem very interested in magical creatures, to tell you the truth. She just wanted me to talk about you, Harry. Well, I told her we'd been friends since I went to fetch you from the Dursleys. Never had to tell him off in 4 years, she said. Never played up in lessons, has he? I told her no, and she didn't seem happy at all. You think she wanted me to say you were horrible at Harry?
Of course she did.
Of course she did. Yeah, she was looking for dirt.
Yeah, she wants a new angle. And it's just interesting, just Rita Skeeter honing in specifically on Harry. Because, I don't know, just the Nate, you know, we know she's a scum bucket, you know, that just likes gossip. But there are plenty of other avenues for gossip, in the sense that Victor Crumb is a champion.
Well, even just I was actually a little surprised here, because I mean, there's so much she could probably get on Hagrid. Like, the thing, you know, like, he went to Azkaban, like, he's been accused of stuff. I mean, we all love Hagrid, and, you know, he's a well-intentioned guy with a good heart, even if he makes mistakes, and all that stuff. So, I mean, you'd think there's a story there that she could easily write, but she doesn't go, it doesn't sound like she tries to go for that at all. It's all about trying to get something on Harry, and then when she can't get anything, she's just not interested.
Right.
So, I mean, not that I'm encouraging her behavior, but a missed opportunity, Rita.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, again, like, just, who knows all, or, like, there's so much dirt that could be had at Hogwarts, and it just seems ill-advised that she puts all her eggs in one basket with Harry.
I think the thing that we talked about maybe a couple episodes ago was, I feel like Harry must be like clickbait, but like, you know, before there wasn't a link on the website, but he must sell papers, or, you know, because she's definitely focused on him.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so they get a little more about the ball, and Dumbledore has booked the Weird Sisters, which is a musical group named after the Weird Sisters, which are the three, you know, witches from Macbeth. Which I was just thinking about that more so because I just watched a analysis video on YouTube that was talking about like the Mean Girl trio, like of like the Plastics and Mean Girls, and how like just breaking down the sort of, you know, maiden, mother, crone, you know, triad, and how in Shakespeare and Greek mythology, and how the Plastics, you know, reflect that sort of, you know, trinity of female power.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah, so
never would have made that connection.
No, me neither.
Yeah, so because of that, they were mentioning the Weird Sisters from Macbeth a lot, and I'm just like, oh yes, I remember.
That's funny. Yeah.
It's a great name for a wizard band.
It really is, yeah.
Yep. And let's see what we got here.
Well, I think something that I kind of wondered about too is they kind of talk about how some professors are like, we know your minds are not here. You're focused on the tournament. You're focused on this, you know, the Yule Ball. We're kind of taking it easy. And then we have some other professors who are like, don't care, concentrate on your stuff. So I thought that was kind of, I wondered if that was going to be coming mm-hmm. up.
That seems kind of realistic. I feel like in school, teachers who were a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Some would just give up, and then others would be like, I will fail you if you don't pay attention.
Right, right.
Oh,
right.
There's also a note in here about, like, they're going more all out on the Christmas decorations, like, more than usual to try to really impress the other schools.
Yeah, and Harry commenting that it was odd hearing, like, oh ye merry faithful from a suit of armor that only knew half the words.
And Peeves hiding and, like, adding rude words to the lyrics.
Yeah. That's funny. And so we get a little bit of Fred and George, because Fred and George are asking if they can borrow Pigwidgeon. And Ron's like, why? Because we want to ask him to the ball.
Because Sassy. We want to send a letter.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is the point where we kind of start maybe getting a little, like, it kind of, there's been a few points here where we've seen Fred and George writing letters or trying to send a letter or needing to send a letter. And so it's like, I think, I don't know if it's Harry or Ron. I think Ron asks, like, who are you writing to? Like, what have you guys been up to? And they, like, don't divulge anything.
Yeah. Yep. And then we get the one of Fred's impromptu proposal to Angelina to go to the ball with him. And she says, yes.
Yeah, it's very romantic. Oi, Angelina.
Right. That's a kind of, I was like, that's kind of the invitation I would have preferred. It's probably like they're friends and it's like, yeah, yeah, sure, whatever. Anyway. And I don't know. That reminded me of some of the people I went to high school with where it was very casual and it wasn't this like high stress, like, oh my God. It was just kind of like, okay, we have to buy tickets. Like who's going with who so we can make this cheaper. Mm-hmm. So it was, I mean, cause I never had a proper date at any school dances. So yep. All this pressure was a little intense, I guess.
And misogynistic Ron is like, we should get a move on. We don't want to end up with a pair of trolls.
I was so disappointed in him. Like, come on, man.
Well, you know, said Ron, shrugging, I'd rather go alone than with Eloise Midgen. Her acne's loads better lately, and she's really nice. Her nose is off-center. Oh, I see, said Hermione, bristling. So basically, you're going to take the best-looking girl who will have you, even if she's completely horrible? Yeah, that sounds about right.
What really bothers me about this, I mean, other than, like, the obvious fact that he's being, the obvious thing that he's being a jerk, is that this conversation is between Ron and Hermione. Why doesn't Harry say anything? I know he, like, I guess he's back to being friends with Ron and wants to stay on his good side because he likes having Ron around and doesn't want to rock the boat, I guess. But there's so many times where I feel like we all know, and even Harry knows, that Ron is being kind of unreasonable and a bit of a jerk. And Harry is always very complicit. He doesn't say anything. He doesn't say, you can't call girls trolls, man. Or, like, like, Ron, like, seriously? Like, he never says anything like that. It's always a reaction from Hermione, which is warranted, but I'm just really disappointed in Harry. Like, the more I read this book, when I first read it, I didn't think anything of it because, I guess you're a young kid and your friend says something dumb and it's like, do I call my friend out on it, like, right now? But I don't know. Ron just does it so often, or starting to do it so often, that I don't understand why Harry, maybe even privately, just later, if he's too embarrassed to be like, Ron, what are you doing?
Yeah, Harry it's frustrating. Harry has a long history of even mentally acknowledge that Ron is the wrong party, but still won't team up with Hermione against him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which, again, I don't know, it's like like bro code that, you go with your male buddy even if your female buddy's right.
Yeah, that's like toxic and not correct.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I was thinking about a real life example of somebody I went to a dance with. My two good friends in high school were both men, and or boys, I don't know what you call high school kids. I thankfully I felt like it was all very on the level. It wasn't, if anything, I was probably the worst, just being ridiculous and over the top to get a laugh. But I don't think any of us would have stood for that kind of behavior. But also, I think it's a testament to Ron's insecurity that he's like, I have to find, and we know who he ends up asking, kind of like, what are you thinking, man? Like, just, get it together.
Yep.
I don't know.
And so, Harry, we've just got to grit our teeth and do it, said Ron Friday morning, in a tone that suggested they were planning the storming of an impregnable fortress.
Oh my, the word choice there.
Well, it's just the classic idea of, from the male perspective, viewing courtship as war. Because, again, all of society puts it on men to do the initiating of courtship. And the men always being active and women always being passive.
Yeah.
And yet so many girls have come up to Harry, supposedly.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't think it's definitely weird for the girls to do the asking, like, at this school or for this event. But
Yeah. But anyway, so finally Harry gets Cho alone for a private word. How'd you feel about this, Jess?
I knew it was coming, and I thought, okay, is this when it's going to happen? And then, of course, Cedric asked her before Harry, got the chance. So I was like, one more, we keep pitting Harry and Cedric against each other, even though they seem to keep fighting it. But I know, just like as far as romantic things, these sting a little more, so I don't know how Harry will go forward with this.
It's just funny because, Harry was finally getting to a point of, like, being at peace with Cedric, and that they were on equal footing with the Quidditch stuff of the past and the Triwizard Tournament, and now he suddenly realized that Cedric was in fact a useless pretty boy who didn't have enough brains to fill an egg cup.
Nice, Harry. Like, come on, man.
Well, he didn't say it out. He didn't say it out loud.
That's true.
He just thought it to himself.
That's true.
I don't know how I feel about this whole Cho thing. You know, obviously I feel bad that Harry, you know, got rejected, because I think he kind of, you know, he like asked in an appropriate way. And I think Cho felt bad that she had to reject him, because, you know, she actually didn't want to hurt his feelings. But like the fact that Harry's liking Cho. And this, I guess this is kind of realistic, because why do people have the crushes they have? You know, sometimes it's just like, well, I don't understand it. Why? But, you know, I mean, Cedric asked Cho. Cedric's also popular. I think it's mentioned that Cho is like very popular and like has a lot of friends. And like, it's not clear to me why Harry likes Cho specifically. I don't think it's ever really made clear, like, I don't think they have many classes together, or any class. Does Gryffindor have classes with Ravenclaw ever? Not that
statistically
really
speaking, heard. They have to have at least a few, but are they ever okay. divulged that much? I think they have. They must have Flitwick's class, Charms, because Flitwick's head of Ravenclaw. I think they may have Charms with the Ravenclaws.
But it's just like, until we start learning that Harry likes this girl, there's no mention of her. Like, it's not like he's talked to her or saw her do something that he really admired or appreciated. Or it's almost like he doesn't really have anything, like he knows nothing about her other than like he just likes her. Well, so I don't know. I just find that kind of like weird.
The
I don't know.
Only commonality they have, and also with Cedric,
is Quidditch. Yeah,
and they're all the Seekers.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's what he was, maybe that's all he was impressed by. I think they had one game where she was playing, and like that's when he kind of noticed her for the first time.
Yeah, like it's weird. If we want to dig a little deeper, like just the general, she likes Quidditch, he likes Quidditch, and he's a 14-year-old boy, like that's as deep as it gets, but also in the sense of
right
but also in the sense, to be fair, he saw that unlike the Slytherins when they play Quidditch, like when the Dementor or the supposed Dementor came out to the field, like Cho didn't like exploit it or like do anything, like she immediately is like, oh no, look out, Harry.
Yeah, I mean, again, at that age, that's probably enough to be like, yeah. Oh, I actually really, really like this person. I want to date them, you know. So, I mean, I guess that's fair. But yeah, it just seems like, I mean, he's very upset because rejection's never fun. But it just feels like he doesn't even know her well enough to be like super, super sad. I don't know.
Yeah. So Harry goes back common room. Ron, for reasons beyond our understanding, asked Fleur Delacour to the ball.
He, what did he shoot his shot a little too high there? I mean, but, you know, Harry's trying to make him feel better. And so, like, well, she's part Vila. So, like, you probably just, like, lured and you couldn't help yourself, you know, a little bit. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. And then they start spilling the tea of, you know, hey, Neville asked Hermione.
Yeah, Ginny's there. Ginny's the one who's comforting Ron and then telling them this info.
Yep. And Hermione said no to Neville, said she was going with someone else. And what do we got? We've got...
Oh, Ron is so mean on multiple levels here. Like, not just to Hermione, but also to Neville. Like, haha, she clearly just said no, like, to get out of going with Neville, because who'd want to go with Neville? It's like, dude, who'd want to go with you? Like,
exactly.
Yeah, like, Ron's contempt for Neville has absolutely no basis. It didn't have any basis in first year, and it doesn't have any basis now.
It's just the insecurity thing again, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, it's someone that he has, like, social status or power over, at least that he, like, from his point of view, not that he actually right. does. So it's someone he can, like, pick on. Like, he's the youngest brother of many brothers, and this is, like, a way that he's got one up on someone. He's not clumsy like Neville, or whatever people think is wrong with Neville that isn't really a problem. But,
yeah. And Hermione's like, all the good looking ones taken, Ron. Eloise Midget's starting to look quite pretty now, isn't she? Well, I'm sure you'll find someone somewhere who'll have you.
She's taunting him, but I kind of appreciate it because he's been a jerk about all this.
He deserves it.
And Hermione, Neville's right. You are a girl.
Oh, well spotted.
Yeah.
She said acidly. That's one of my favorite adverbs, like, in this particular, you know, quote in this book, like, with this, you know, storyline. Oh, well spotted, she said acidly. You can come with one of us. No, I can't. We need partners. We're going to look really stupid if we haven't gotten anyone. Everyone else has. I can't come with you, said Hermione, now blushing, because I'm already going with someone. No, you're not. You just said that to get rid of Neville. Oh,
so mean.
Did I? Just because it's taken you 3 years to notice Ron doesn't mean no one else has spotted I'm a girl.
Well said, Hermione.
Right. Good job, Hermione.
Yeah. And
Ron he still doesn't believe her. He's like, okay, we get it. Now will you come with us? Like, it's just incredible. And again, Harry is saying nothing. Like, Hermione has helped him learn, like, Accio or Accio or however you're freaking supposed to say it. And she's, like, helped him do, like, so, you know. And he's just standing here silent, like, not saying anything. Because he doesn't want to get between the two of them. But, oh, man.
Yeah. I guess it's all kind of, like, on, you know, the little tense ground. Because there was just the, you know, they're just kind of back together in their newly formed relationship. And I don't know if Harry, like, you know, checks Ron every now and then, but he could at least throw in the, like, hey, come on, man, like, something like that.
Anything, give me anything, Harry.
Right.
Nothing.
And so Hermione's like, I already told you, I'm going with someone else. She's lying, said Ron flatly, watching her go. She's not, said Ginny quietly. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so, yeah, so Ron just, again, is beside himself that Hermione could possibly be going with someone else. And Ron is like, this is getting crazy. Ginny, you can go with Harry. And she's like, I can't, said Ginny. I'm going with Neville.
Aww.
And yeah, which is nice of her.
I appreciate it because we know from books 2 and 3 that she's kind of had a crush on Harry. So it's nice that she doesn't just throw, with that history, that she doesn't just throw Neville overboard to go with Harry, and she keeps her word and goes with Neville.
Good for her. And Neville's fine.
Well, anyway. Yeah, Neville's like a nice guy. I mean, he's like forgetful, and I don't know, school-wise, is he like he's not good? I mean, he's good at herbology, and then he's like not good at other things, I think.
All we know is that he's super good at herbology and sucks at potions.
He's just, I feel like he's like this little, like, he's a late bloomer. Like, he's really going to flourish soon. That's what I'm convinced.
He takes off his glasses later, and then
What I've seen of that actor, like, there's some truth to that. He definitely turned into a very nice-looking person. I mean, I think there's a term, long-bottoming or something, like, for actors that kind of... But anyway, that's neither here nor there. That's ridiculous nonsense that I'm talking about. But they end up asking Pavarti and Lavender, I think, for both
yes,
of them.
Yes, and Pavarti agrees to go with Harry, and Lavender is going with Seamus. And Harry's just like, isn't there anyone who could go with Ron? And Pavarti's like, well, my sister Padma in Ravenclaw might. And so that's basically where it is left. And he
part of me is annoyed that Harry like also arranged Ron's date instead of Ron just dealing with the fact that he might have no date. But at the same time, in some ways, it's maybe a wise move by Harry. Again, I don't appreciate him kind of not speaking up during this whole thing, but I think he's realized that the situation's maybe going to derail further. So he's just like, okay, like, I just got to get someone for Ron. So like, we don't have any more, like, you know, caustic situations happening. Yeah. So to some extent he's a little bit mature in that way, but yeah, I wish he would have spoken up more.
Yeah, and he went back over to Ron feeling that this ball was a lot more trouble than it was worth and hoping very much that Padma Patil's nose was dead center.
Right. Oh mm-hmm. my goodness. Mm-hmm.
And thus concludes Teenage Angst chapter.
Which is fun. Yes. I mean, I really enjoy it as, well, I mean, angst isn't fun, but like just as a chapter of like watching the dynamics of all of these different characters happening, like you've got, you know, Ron, Ginny, Hermione and Harry, you know, like it's just kind of, I don't know, it's just kind of
George, Cho, Cedric, mm-hmm. many things going on at once, but right. it's a little bit of a stretch, but let us get into Gothic Geek Out.
Yeah, this was hard.
It was difficult.
Yeah, the best I could come up with, I'm just butting in and going first, I guess, is the servants and, well, like the servants, and y'all can't see my parentheses, but I'm doing in parentheses or in quotes, I'm sorry, and the relationship with the kind of tenants of the house. So thinking of the house elves and the kids at the wizarding school, kind of like, and you know, similar things are depicted in Gothic literature, kind of in like, I thought of Jane Eyre and how, you know, she's a servant in a regard and treated that way. And definitely in the, not Heathcliff. I always confuse Wuthering Heights and Jane Eyre. I don't know why. But when she gets to Mr. Rochester, you know, that's how their relationship starts. So kind of that, that's not necessarily a Gothic like theme, like, but that is definitely something that I think we see often in Gothic literature is the relationship with the people that keep the house and the people that own the house.
Mm-hmm. Nice. My reaching into the dark was just the portrait door of the kitchen. Obviously not a very Gothic or majestic picture. It's just a fruit bowl still alive, but just the idea that, you know, we've talked multiple times, Jess, about the importance of portraits and funky moving portraits being a part of Gothic literature all the way from Castle of Otranto and Harry Potter really solidifying that. So yeah, we got another magical portrait that moves.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, I was sort of thinking of the portraits too. There, I wrote down a couple things. So I think, Amy, you mentioned this earlier, but like it's very brief, but there's a moment where they're talking about, you know, as December approaches, you know, Harry's happy to be inside the castle with all the warm fires and not on the icy Durmstrang ship bobbing up and down. So that kind of gave me like, just like, again, anytime the castle is mentioned, it's Gothic vibes. And then I don't know if, is this Gothic? Like the over-the-top Christmas decorations? Like, I kind of thought of that maybe as a little bit Gothic, like a Gothic Christmas. I don't know if Christmas stuff can be considered Gothic, but like the degree to which they're doing, like with the never-ending or everlasting icicles and like the singing suits of armor and like all that stuff, like that kind of made me think of, oh, that's a very very Gothic Christmas. Yeah.
No, I can definitely see that.
Yeah. I was thinking of just, for some reason, I thought of Anne Radcliffe and just kind of her, you know, extensive descriptions of things and
of nature,
you know, kind of,
yeah.
So that, to me, that just kind of the enhancements, that makes sense in that regard.
Nice. Yeah. Good. All good things. Cause again, wasn't super uber Gothic this time around. And now we move on to Tarot of the Day, which the card I picked at random was number 10 in the Major Arcana, the Wheel of Fortune. So, the Wheel of Fortune reminds you that the wheel is always turning and life is in a state of constant change. If you're going through a difficult time, rest assured that it will get better from here. Good luck and good fortune will make the return in time. Similarly, if things are going well, know this too will change and life may return to normal soon. The cycle shows why it is so important to cherish the blissful moments in your life and make the most of them while they are within reach, because in a flash they could be gone. So...
I think that's very appropriate, actually.
Yeah, I think it's very appropriate in the context because, again, this whole, like, asking for dates, like, this is basically a game of Russian roulette.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I mean, we have multiple levels of change here. Like, we have, I mean, the Yule Ball itself is something that is not normal. So, you know, for the school year. So it's like we have that and everyone's trying to get through it, which includes, like, asking for dates. You know, and these are like kids, like puberty age, right? And right. So, you know, we're just trying to like get through this so we can get back to maybe a normal like school, you know, school lifestyle. And but you know, obviously, we'll come out different at the end. And you've got like the changing relationships between like Harry and like Ron and Hermione. You know, and how is that going to play out? Is that ever going to get back to normal? I don't know. But yeah, I think it makes sense because there's just a lot of things that, you know, it's the end of the year. So once all this is over, it'll be the start of a new year soon. So,
right. Yeah. Any thoughts, Jess?
I was, you know, kind of related to change and just the wheel and change being uncomfortable and sort of things. But what is it? That's kind of what's guaranteed. I mean, things are always going to change, including, you know, Ron and Ron, Hermione, and Harry. I could not think of the name Harry Potter for some reason. We're only reading like 7 books about him anyway. Like that dynamic is obviously going to shift, and just like things, you know, kind of are ever evolving and their progress through school, you know, God knows what Rita Skeeter's up to with this new news article after talking to Hagrid. So we'll see how that shifts the dynamic as well.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty then. And then the next card that I picked from the Black Moon Astrology Oracle cards is card number 10, which is Neptune, the planet Neptune.
Hmm.
So, although nebulous, hazy, and indirect, the energy of Neptune is one of the easiest to see. Where Neptune is placed in a chart is where we are most inspired, but also an area where we deceive ourselves. It is the place of mishaps, bringing on undercurrents of strangeness. For many, Neptune is the source of many troubles, since this card indicates escapism as well as beauty. Dreams, film, art, disappointment, and reverie all fall under rulership of Neptune. Refusing to look at what's real or simply being unable to, as well as seeing enemies as friends and vice versa, and all traits brought on by this watery planet. This is a time where someone may try to manipulate with their crisis and rescue cycles, exhausting friends and family with their many problems. So, I think this is relevant in terms of, again, specifically crisis rescue, Ron's presumption that Hermione is always going to come to the rescue, be it magically, schoolwork, or socially.
And that's an excellent point.
And Ron basically becoming a problem, you know, for everybody else through his behavior. And also just in terms of mishaps, like I was also thinking of Harry getting rejected by Cho, you know, like that was a huge bummer. And he was sort of, you know, feeling okay about Cedric. And now he's like, oh, he really is a jerk, isn't he? You know, just a lot of mishaps in this chapter. Even the previous one with the elves, you know, I think in some ways you can say you've got sort of weird things going on there because Hermione thinks things should be one way, but it's not how they see it. Yeah.
I guess that made me feel better. I thought of Ron too, and his kind of, you know, his problematic self. And I think it's so interesting that Hermione, who I know who's taking Hermione to the Yule Ball. Let's just put it out there. I know who it is. But I think it's so interesting that that all transpired and they had no idea. You know, Ron and Harry were like, nobody's asking you. It's like, I guess to me, I'm like, who's she been complaining about in the library constantly? Like, just think about that for a minute. So.
Oh, so you already know who's taking her?
Yes, I do. Okay. I don't know how, but I do.
Yeah, it's Neptune is the source of many troubles. This card indicates escapism as well as beauty. And I don't know, that just made me think again of just Ron's like chauvinism, like trying to escape his troubles by fantasizing that he could get a girl that's so clearly out of his league when he does nothing to make it so that he has admirable personality traits, or at the very least, and is acting on them.
Yeah. Right.
And Harry escapes his troubles by kind of not speaking up, I think.
Yeah.
And escapism of, you know, catastrophizing this stupid Yule Ball because that's an excuse to not work on his egg clue.
Yeah, man, good point.
You just like called me out for a bunch of stuff. I do.
Oh, no.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, it's easy to be like, oh God, and avoid everything. So yeah, I guess we kind of, you know, I think we mentioned it a little bit, but Hermione definitely like calls him out, like maybe look into this. It could be very complicated. So that also makes me think about what happens when Hermione, let's say she has this relationship and it evolves and she kind of, you know, pushes Harry and Ron to the side. They're going to have to figure out some stuff for themselves. So.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yep. Alrighty then. Good stuff. Good cards. Very applicable. And
both
now,
tens.
Yes, both tens. I didn't even think of that. And now we shall move on to our last exercise, fan fiction time. So, Holly, what did you come up with?
Okay, I was trying to... It's just one thing for, like, both the chapters, right?
Yeah, just one thing.
Okay. I feel like there's a couple obvious ones to think about for the second chapter, so I'll do one for the first chapter, actually. So, what if the house elves actually admired Dobby? Mm-hmm. You know, what if they were impressed by... But I don't know. Maybe that's too far-fetched because there's like a bit... I feel like it's so ingrained for them to like not do that.
Well, it depends on
like,
how...
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it depends on how much of, like, again, their sort of ingrainedness, how much of that is truly what they think and how much of it could potentially just be performative that, you know, like as a defense mechanism, you know, a lot of the house elves like are making a show because there are people, there are wizards around to show that they reject, you know, Dobby questioning the current system. But maybe privately, you know, they actually think about it, or maybe a few of them even go and talk to Dobby about certain things privately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely the seeds like definitely planted. So, you know, it's kind of turning over in their mind new information and new, you know. So I don't think it's that far-fetched. I think some people, or I call them people all the time. So some house elves might be kind of turning it over in their mind. They're like, no, this is great. We love it. But then secretly at night, you know, they're like, kind of like, wouldn't it be nice? Like Dobby is kind of onto something here. You know, I think about, and I feel like I'm about to get real political. I was thinking about like Colin Kaepernick and his protest at the NFL games and how ultimately, it was kind of seen like he was kind of way ahead of something because people caught on, I think, 2 or 3 years later. And they're like, oh, maybe there was something to that. So I just kind of have a feeling Dobby's a little ahead of his time. And he kind of seems like the weirdo right now. But in actuality, he's onto something.
He's a trailblazer.
He's a trailblazer.
What I hope would happen is that eventually Dumbledore would pay them all salaries. And then maybe that would reduce the budget for some, I don't know, unnecessary creatures in certain classes.
Just like defund defund Hagrid's magical creature class or whatever, which we know what that means. I'm taking a political stand. I'm really not. I just thought it was a funny expression.
That would be sad, but maybe just a restriction on the budget for what the class entails.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
I'm just joking.
Alrighty. What was your scenario, Jess?
Man, I copped out here because I am a bit of a romance reader too. So I love a relationship. So I was thinking, what if Cho asked Harry? Because they kind of had a little bit of a little flirtation there for a while. You know, she's not wearing the button, whatever. I feel like Cedric probably isn't going to have a problem finding another date. So just it might give a little bit of a little credence to kind of the female people in this story asking men, but boys out. That is kind of, you know, we had some girls approach Harry and his reaction was pretty strong, but kind of elevating that character a little bit, and maybe Harry would, I'm sure he'd be super psyched. So I couldn't come up with anything super super fun, but that's the best I can do.
Of course I thought of that too, like not so much if Cho had asked Harry, but more if what if Cho had said yes to Harry.
I can hear your cat.
I was just trying to mute myself because she's back there hollering. Sorry. She's a pill.
And just the notion of, again, as Holly was saying, they really don't know each other that well and just have a very superficial commonality of Quidditch. And if they actually went on a date together, would it develop? Would Harry be like, oh, she actually has more substantial qualities and I continue to like her? But also I thought of what if Neville and Hermione had gone together?
That would be adorable, and I would have been very happy with that because I'm rooting for Neville always. So that would have been very sweet. I think it also might have helped Neville. You made me think of a different pairing. Like, what if Cho went with Neville, which seems so kind of out of reach, but it might have helped him gain some confidence, and I think that would have been nice.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about like some of those scenarios. So like not just for the relationship itself, but like the far-reaching impact. So like if Cho had asked Harry or she'd said yes, you know, if Harry and Cho had wound up going together, I mean, who knows if it would have gone anywhere, but I think Harry would have been, you know, very very happy in the moment and would have like had a great time at least. And I think when he goes back to the room, you know, with Ron, like, having just been rejected, but Harry not feeling crummy himself, like, he would be, like, so elated that, like, he and Cho were going together, right? So I just feel like that would sort of change maybe the situation in the room a little bit because, you know, obviously Harry wouldn't have to ask Parvati for help. Yeah. Which means maybe he isn't trying to find something for Ron. Maybe he even says something to Ron like, look, man, like you might just not have anyone, or, you know, you might just need to chill a bit on, like, you know, because something might work out and, you know, you're just being real negative and rude. You know, maybe that whole like conversation would have changed if Harry had come back feeling really happy instead of really dejected.
But
and then again, for Neville and Hermione, I mean, I think that again would have been it's still a slap in the face for Ron, I think, that Hermione goes with she's going with anyone else, because like this is like news to Ron that she's a girl, right? Yeah, I don't know. I think that would have been nice as well. I think that maybe wouldn't have changed things so much because, you know, Ron would have still been a sourpuss, I think, at either of those situations.
Yeah, but again, I like the idea that Harry could maybe have bucked up to Ron a little more, but because he got rejected, he's in the same mindset of girls suck.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Alrighty. And thus concludes this episode of Rambling Raven Puffs. Thank you so much for coming on again, Holly.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, yeah, great to be here. Tell me what's happening for book five, because I'd love to come back and do something.
Oh, do you want to do book five? Alrighty, then I'll let you know, because we're going to finish recording Goblet of Fire by the end of the year. So,
yeah. Okay.
2022 will be Goblet of Fire. And so, but for next week, we'll have chapters 23 and 24, The Yule Ball and Rita Skeeter's Scoop. Catch you guys later. Bye.
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 Thank you for listening to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Our theme music was composed by John Williams, recreated by Kinez Norwar. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophie Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media, Sophie Mare Studios on Instagram, Sophie Mare Studios on TikTok, and SophieMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophie Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophieMare Studios, all lowercase. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks. That was the Sophie Mare Studios podcast.